And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. Lots to talk about in the news. There's a lot of speculation over the vice presidential choice of Barack Obama. It's got to happen by Saturday. Rumor has it that Obama is going to appear with his vice presidential choice on Saturday in Springfield, Illinois, his home state, and, of course, the place where Abraham Lincoln began. And also about the recent appearance by Obama and McCain before evangelical church mega leader, mega church leader, whatever he is, Rick Warren, and their discussion there. And also, I know there's some discussion about abortion, both the views of the person who I think is the most likely choice for Barack Obama, my governor, Virginia Governor Tim Kaine, his views and those of abortion. It's all connected with Rick Warren. I also want to talk about Pakistan. Musharraf is finally gone. And I think that's a good thing. I think any time a democracy takes over, I don't know about any time, almost any time, it's a good thing, particularly if that democracy can last longer. It's interesting to me that the Bush administration, until the very last minute, was defending the dictator. That really doesn't put us on the right side of history, does it? China is finishing up its Olympic Games with virtually no talk of its own authoritarian streak. And me, I'm on a one-man crusade saying that, yes, it does matter that Russia invaded Georgia. I'm firmly in the camp of French President Nicolas Sarkozy, who I think is using the right combination of carrots and sticks, while our president is out to lunch and on vacation again. George W. Bush has now taken more than 500 days of vacation, more vacation days than any president at any time in American history, which actually seems a lot, considering the fact that in the early days of American history, president was supposed to be part-time. But apparently Andrew Jackson, Thomas Jefferson, John Adams, all of them didn't take as many vacation days as George W. Bush. Also want to talk about the candidates' wives. Some new information on Cindy McCain and the relationship with her family, and whether or not this is even fair to discuss. We'll go into that. Also, a new decision in California on the right of gay people to be treated by doctors. You wouldn't think it would have to come to a California Supreme Court decision, but it did. So a whole lot on the agenda, but as always, I want to hear from you. I want to know which aspects you want to talk about. So if I say anything that interests you, what I said now, or maybe you want to bring up something that I haven't brought up, I always encourage you to call in 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. Give me a call. I'm always happy to talk with you, even when you disagree. I want to start with Musharraf because I think it's interesting how little attention the press gives to Pakistan. Now, I know, Pakistan's a world away and so forth, but given that we invaded an entire country, Iraq, which is also a world away, I think it's vital when a nuclear power goes from a dictatorship to a democracy. I think that's a positive thing. I mean, there aren't that many nuclear powers on Earth. We know, of course, England and France are democracies. I am extremely worried about Russia and China, always have been. In fact, I think both of them have become more authoritarian in recent years, and we'll talk about both Russia and China. But who's left with nuclear power? Well, there's India, which is a democracy, South Africa, which is now a democracy, Israel, which is a democracy, North Korea, which is not, and which I've expressed concern about, and the only one left is Pakistan. Pakistan is a nuclear power that is, it seems, on its rocky road to democracy. Now, Pakistan's had democracy before. This is not a a country that's been a dictatorship for a long time or a democracy for a long time. They seem to be going by fits and starts back and forth. If you know the history of Pakistan, you know that Britain, Great Britain, which seems to have messed up so many countries in the third world, had control of all of British India through the end of World War II. And British India included the countries of India and Pakistan and Bangladesh, those three countries today. And then when Britain decided to leave based on Gandhi and nonviolence and a really terrific Indian revolutionary campaign that did not resort to violence to get rid of the British, which is, I think, the best revolutions there can be, well, there was, unfortunately, violence between the local Hindus and the local Muslims. And the Hindus mostly lived in land that became India. Muslims mostly lived in land that became Pakistan and East Pakistan, today called Bangladesh, and where the lines weren't clearly drawn, where there were lots of Hindus left in Muslim territory in Pakistan and lots of Muslims left in India. Well, more than 20 million people switched sides, a sort of mostly self-chosen, but to some extent militarily forced ethnic cleansing. It unfortunately seems to happen when these kinds of things happen. But the point of all this is that India became a very stable democracy. I don't think we give enough credit to India. Many of us complain, rightfully, when jobs are outsourced to India, and I think it's a fair complaint to support American labor standards. But that doesn't make India an enemy, not by any sense. India is a very poor country. It is, of course, the second most populous country on earth after China, and it is a democracy. Here you have hundreds of millions of people, extreme poverty, and a stable democracy for more than 60 years. That's one of the reasons why it doesn't concern me that India has nuclear weapons. But Pakistan has had a rocky road. Pakistan has democracy and then goes back to dictatorship and then back to democracy and back and forth. Why do we care? Well, one, because they have nuclear weapons. Also because, let's face it, enemy number one of the American people, the Osama bin Laden, is sitting in Pakistan. Now, he's in one of those tribal areas, one of those areas that the Pakistani army rarely goes into. But Pakistan is essential to the war on terror. And what fascinates me is the United States has often, in our sordid past, supported all kinds of dictatorships, saying, well, they're brutal to their own people, but they're good allies to the United States. That was true throughout Latin America, Chile and Pinochet and Argentina and virtually any number of Latin American countries. It was true in Iran, where we overthrew the democratically elected Mossadegh and put in the Shah and taught him how to torture his own people. And, hey, the Shah was very good for the United States of America, not so good for his own people, though perhaps not as bad as the present Iranian government. But we have a practice of supporting dictators because they're pro-American. And currently, we support the dictators of Saudi Arabia and Egypt. Egypt is a particularly brutal dictatorship that is seen as pro-American. And we do it because, well, as Franklin D. Roosevelt once said of Somoza, the dictator of Nicaragua, he said, well, he's a bastard, but he's our bastard. What we find is when we support these dictators, many times our bastards come back to bite us. It was true of Noriega in Panama. It was true of Ferdinand Marcos in the Philippines. It was true of the fact that we helped the Afghanis fight against the Soviet Union, and then some of our aid got to a certain Osama bin Laden. So it seems to me that while I understand the realist school, I know why we're supporting some of these dictators, it seems to me that we have to be very careful. It's not a practice I like. I would like to always be seen on the side of democracy. I wouldn't give aid, for example, to the Egyptian government. They are a repressive government. I'm not saying declare war on them, but at the same time, we don't have to give them billions of dollars in aid, at least not anymore. Well, in Pakistan, we, of course, have aided Musharraf extremely. We have given him $10 billion since September 11, 2001. And unfortunately, most of that aid seems to have gone to, well, sustain him in power. That's another difference between aiding a democracy versus aiding a dictatorship. When you aid a dictator, you're not quite sure where all the money's going. Maybe that's why in Iraq we have Iraqi leaders literally handing out cash in the streets. That's where all our taxpayer money is going. But Pakistan's been on a rocky road. Many felt we had to support Musharraf as he was the only one to fight the Taliban. But in the last couple of years, it seems absolutely clear that the Pakistani people were taking back their country. It first came a year ago when Musharraf kicked out the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court there, who was about to rule on the illegality of Musharraf's grabbing the presidency. And you had a march, not of terrorists in the street, but a march of lawyers. It was actually a very reputable protest. Lawyers and professional classes, nonviolent people marching for the rule of law. And wouldn't it have been great to have had a president stand solidly behind them, solidly behind Pakistani democracy? Well, we didn't. We said a few words of encouragement, but basically we supported Musharraf. And what fascinates me is what happened over the last week, where you have the elected government of Pakistan, the party that is mostly in charge is the same party of Benazir Bhutto, who, of course, was assassinated. Whether or not Musharraf had a role in that, we still don't know. But her party, a fairly liberal party, a fairly pro-United States party, at least for that region, is the majority party. Now, there is another party that they'll probably have to have a coalition with, which is an Islamic party head by Sharif, who I'm more concerned about. But, of course, the third party is Musharraf's party. But in any case, when her party came to power, we still pretty much stuck with Musharraf. And so the Pakistani new democratic parliament did what it should have done. It began impeachment proceedings. Sound familiar? In Pakistan, impeachment was not off the table. In Pakistan, they said, Musharraf, either you resign or we're throwing you out. And the United States, even at that point, said some nice things about Musharraf while claiming neutrality in the conflict. Claiming neutrality. Whatever happened to the rule of law? What fascinates me is that when Musharraf finally resigned, which happened just yesterday, or the day before yesterday, someone in the Bush administration was praising this outgoing dictator. Now, what possible role could that serve to show that we're still good friends with an ousted dictator? What's the point? Why aren't we praising the rule of law? Why aren't we praising the new democracy? Don't we understand that in a democracy, the people's voices matter? Don't we understand that this is an insult to the Pakistani people, that they're not going to be very friendly with the United States, not going to be as supportive of our agenda of getting rid of terrorists like Osama bin Laden, not as willing to be as pro-Western when we have a government that continues to praise their dictators? Must we always be on the wrong side of history? I mean, there's a reason why the Iranians turned against us. They're turning toward us now only because their government's so terrible. But we angered them by supporting the Shah all those years, just as we angered so many people in Latin America by supporting dictators there too. Here's the thing. When you support a dictator, it comes back to bite you. You think we would have learned that by now. Now, 2 days after Musharraf has been gone, when it seems he's clearly out the door, now I'm hearing some Bush representatives say, well, we were neutral. That wasn't what they said 2 days ago. 2 days ago, they were praising Musharraf. Now they say they're neutral. Heck, can't they at least lie and say, oh, we were always supportive of democracy in Pakistan? We need a better diplomat as president. We need someone like Barack Obama. And I got to tell you, Obama's not doing so well. Now, this is right before the Democratic National Convention, where candidates traditionally get a bump. I myself am proud to say I will be in Denver all next week reporting for the Head On Radio Network. I'll be doing extended reports outside my normal one-hour time frame, some extent on Bob's show, to some extent during the day. We'll give you all the details. We haven't worked them all out yet. Partly depends on when I get there, you know, how much time I get before a mic and things like that. But I'll be reporting from Denver. I'll be giving you all the ins and outs, and hopefully you'll be asking me your questions to find out what's going on there, and I'll be able to report live to you. But I got to tell you, going into the convention, right before Obama makes his vice presidential choice, he's hurting. If you look at the polls for this period 4 years ago, Kerry was a good 5-6 points ahead of Bush. And now in the latest polls I've seen, either Obama's up a point or McCain's up a point. Obama really needs to hit this ball out of the park. Partly because, well, let's face it, a lot of Americans are stupid. A lot of Americans stupidly believe the lies that the McCain campaign tells them. And Republicans play dirty. That's what they do. That's how they win elections. That's part of why they're called Republicans. That's what they believe in. They believe in dirty politics. I hope you'll stay tuned for tomorrow's show. Tomorrow I'm going to have Bob Fitrakis, someone who's an expert on clean elections, or shall I say dirty elections. We're going to talk about whether the 2008 election is going to be free and fair. In my view, we've come a long way since 2000 and 2004, but I recognize we haven't gone far enough in that regard. So don't miss tomorrow's show on that. But the point is, this convention is vital for Obama, and his vice presidential choice is vital, too. And I know many people who will judge the candidates based on their vice presidential choices. It's fascinating to me. I know there are people right now listening to my voice, those of you listening, Head On Radio Network. I know many of you would love to see someone on the left wing of the Democratic Party, someone like Dennis Kucinich, someone like him be Obama's vice presidential pick. But I know you know that ain't going to happen. And I want to explain why that isn't going to happen. I think you know it in your minds. You may not have felt it yet in your hearts. Yes, it may be cliche, but a national election is all about reaching out to the middle. Now, I know a lot of Democrats are gritting their teeth as they see Obama reach out to the middle, as they see Obama take more nuanced positions on things that we think are clear. And I just got to say that's part of the way politics works. It doesn't particularly upset me. He hasn't crossed any lines that I consider inviolable. I do grit my teeth a bit. I do get upset a bit, but I recognize that's how the process works. One of the things that bothered me, though, again, gritting my teeth, not changing my vote for Obama. No, I'm not going to vote for Nader. No, I'm not going to stay home. I'm still much, much happier about Obama than Kerry. That being said, I was a little troubled by his visit to mega preacher Rick Warren. Now, among evangelical mega preachers, understanding that I don't have a very high opinion of many evangelical mega preachers, but among evangelical mega preachers, I think it's fair to say Rick Warren is not the worst of them. I can think of many that are much, much worse. So this isn't about Rick Warren. What it's about is whether we should ask our presidential candidates religious questions. The Constitution expressly says there shall be no religious test for public office in the United States. So what am I to think when Rick Warren is asking each of the candidates about their belief in and relationship with Jesus Christ? Well, as a Jew, I got to tell you, it hurts. It hurts. Frankly, Thomas Jefferson would have been offended. Jefferson, who coined the phrase Wallace separation between church and state, made it very clear that such questions were out of bounds. As he put it, it doesn't depend on whether my neighbor believes in no God or multiple gods. What matters is his views on policy. Well, I agree with Thomas Jefferson, but I'm afraid he would be booed out of Rick Warren's church. And Obama gave all the answers you might expect, talking about being a sinner and saved by Jesus Christ and all of that. And that doesn't really bother me. I don't really mind someone's religion unless it impinges on my freedom. You can believe whatever you want to believe. I have a friend who, and I'm pretty sure it's a joke, but he talks about believing in the flying spaghetti monster. He considers himself a strong FSM advocate. And you know what? I think he means it as a joke. I don't care whether you believe in the flying spaghetti monster or Marduk or Islam or Christianity or Judaism or Buddhism or whatever you want to believe in. Heck, you can believe in witchcraft for all I care, as long as you don't impinge on my freedom. And that's not an afterthought. That's a very important thought. Evangelical Christians don't bother me as long as they don't impinge on my freedom. The problem is, evangelical Christians often want to impinge on my freedom. They want to impinge on gay rights. They want to impinge on choices a woman can make with her own body. They want to impinge on what we teach in public schools. They want not just religion taught, but their particular brand of religion taught in our public schools. In other words, evangelical Christians try to impinge on my freedom all the time. But I'm not against them because they're evangelical Christians. I'm against them because they're impinging on my freedom. And where you have people like Jim Wallace, who's a liberal evangelical Christian who doesn't believe in impinging on my freedom, you know, go forth, do justice, good for him. So it did trouble me to see them answer religious questions. It didn't affect my vote. but it troubled me to think it could affect someone else's vote. In fact, I wouldn't mind the question so much after one of them becomes president. I mean, you know, it might be interesting to know a particular president's religious view. Might even be better, frankly, after they're no longer president. But to think that people might vote based on that, that gives me the willies. I mean, okay, I admit it. I had a selfish thought. I thought, well, what would I be doing if I were running for president? Now, I understand that a Jewish person running for president is a very little chance, and a gay person has extremely little chance. If you think about the civil rights movement for African Americans, it's beginning in the 60s, and now only 50 years later, 40 to 50 years later, do we have an African-American, half-African-American presidential candidate. And you think about the gay civil rights movement, it's really just beginning this decade. I think we have to wait at least 50 years on that. But just as a Jew, what if I say my true belief, which is I believe that Jesus of Nazareth was a good man, that he meant well, that he said some really good things, most of which I agree with, that he basically was a nice Jewish boy who wanted to, you know, back to basics, get rid of some of the money and the bad temple practices. And the poor guy was crucified, which I think is a terrible thing. But no, I don't think he was God. Does that mean I would lose a bunch of votes? Probably. But that's what every Jew thinks. I mean, you can't be Jewish and believe in the divinity of Jesus. So it troubles me that they would be asked this question. What would a Jewish candidate say? What would a Muslim candidate say? Or a Buddhist candidate? Or, frankly, a secular Christian candidate, right? I mean, plenty of my friends were raised Christian, but don't believe that Jesus was divine. They believe Jesus existed. He was a man. They don't think he was the Son of God. They're a little suspicious of the, you know, the conception of Mary and her own immaculate conception, and they don't believe it. Should that be a standard for president? Should people really vote for a man like George W. Bush, who definitely claims to believe in the divinity of Jesus and born again and all that, but someone who violates the Constitution with impunity, tortures people, which you think would be a little unchristian, you know, throws people in jail without trial, declares war on countries that never attacked us, spies on hundreds of millions of Americans, all of these you'd think would be unchristian acts, and yet many evangelicals say, well, as long as he believes in Jesus, I don't care if he tortures people. I don't care. Jesus would torture people. It's kind of a weird idea, right? Well, the president says he believes in Jesus, and he tortures people, therefore torturing's okay. The president says he believes in Jesus, and he hates the Constitution, so the Constitution must be a bad thing. This Jewish person or atheist person or Muslim person, they don't believe in the divinity of Jesus. So whatever they do believe in, even if it's caring for the poor or helping the environment or getting us off our addiction oil, well, they must be bad people because they don't think that 2,000 years ago this particular man was a descendant of God. So it's very troubling, the idea that they'd have to go to Rick Warren. And yet, I think the precedent's been set. I think now every president will go. And by the way, I think it's perfectly fair. Let me be clear here, because I don't want to be in any way misunderstood. It's perfectly fair for evangelical Christians to lobby presidential candidates to support their agenda. It's fair. It's the American way. I don't support their agenda, but it's part of your First Amendment rights. I don't support the NRA either. But people who love guns have every right to petition their representatives to ask them to have the right to you know, have armor-piercing bullets to kill police officers. I think it's awful, but they have the right to ask. Evangelical Christians like Latinos and Jews and Asians and farmers and workers and teachers and anybody else you might name in America has every right to ask the president to support their agenda. And evangelicals can come in and ask their president to say, I think that every woman that has conception should be forced to bear that fetus to term. And I think that the 400,000 frozen embryos should all be forcibly implanted in 400,000 women against their will to make them into babies so they're not killed. And I think that gay people should be thrown in jail for the rest of their lives. And look, whatever. The Ku Klux Klan can contact their presidential candidate and say, I think you should run all black people out of the country. it's your right. It's your right as an American citizen to ask your elected representative or your representative running for election anything you please. So it's perfectly fine for me, for the evangelicals, to ask Obama and McCain to support their horrific agenda on women's rights, on gay rights, or should I say lack of women's rights, lack of gay rights. But where it crosses the line, I think, is when they're asked their personal religious feelings. I mean, the Constitution says there should be no religious test. That's even in the original Constitution. It's even before the First Amendment. You know, Congress shall make no law establishing a state religion. Before all that, it's in the original thing. No religious test. Well, what was Rick Warren doing? He was giving them a religious test. My preference would have been Obama to pull out the Constitution and say, Pastor Warren, I have tremendous respect for you and all you do, but the Constitution says there shall be no religious test for any office, any position of trust in the United States. I, as senator, am sworn to uphold the Constitution. As president, I will swear to uphold the Constitution. I'd love to answer your question, but I think it would be improper, given the Constitution. Wouldn't that be beautiful? That would make me happier than pie, which is a weird expression because I don't know how happy pies are. But you know what? I get it. I know why Obama caved. I know why. Listen, Obama happens to be a believing Christian, and he's using it to his advantage. And you know what? I don't blame him. I wish he'd been pure. I wish he'd done it right. But I'm willing to give him a little rope. Because at the end of the day, it's vital that we have a Democratic president. Think how much can be accomplished if Obama becomes president. I'm already hearing, some of my friends, left of center and maybe a bit left of the Democratic Party, complaining about Obama, this, that, or the other. And I'm not at all knocking your complaints. Bob Kincaid has some very strong words on Obama's coal policy, which I'm learning about. I fully admit I'm not an expert on it. But he condemns it, and I respect Bob and have no doubt that he's right on the matter. Many complained about Obama's compromise on the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, which was a compromise. It wasn't as bad as the original bill, but sure, I preferred that he hadn't voted that way. There are a number of things where Obama has moved to the middle. But at the end of the day, if you give up on this man, if you say, I'm staying home, if you don't fully come out and support him, and John McCain is elected, I got to say, it's partly your fault. Remember, it's not just Florida. Yeah, they cheated in Florida. But if one-third of the Nader voters of New Hampshire had voted for Al Gore in 2000, rather than purists and voting for Nader, we wouldn't have had 7 years of war in Iraq. 6 years. We wouldn't have had massive deficits. I think with Al Gore as president, it's quite likely he would have prevented September 11th. We would have a better economy. Middle class, poorer people would be doing better. And even better, we would be on the road to getting off our addiction to foreign oil. We would have taken steps against global warming. Al Gore could have been president the last 8 years, but a few purists said, no, Gore's too much like Bush. I'm voting for Nader. And look what happened. So I know I'm always the voice of moderation. I'm always the guy saying, hey, I understand how you feel. I think Bush should be impeached too, but I know why the Democrats aren't doing it. I still think he should be impeached. Maybe they could do it after Obama's elected. But what can I say? I've been in politics long enough to understand that sometimes you can't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. So criticize Obama all you want. I'll largely agree with you on some of them, but don't ever take your eye off the ball. We've got to elect him president of the United States. I'm going to take a quick break here. Also give you a chance to call in. 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. I'd love to hear your views on anything I've discussed. And when I come back, I want to talk a little bit about Cindy McCain. Right back after this.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95.
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at CityNet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention
$24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit CityNet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. I never thought an Obama victory was a great bet, much less a sure thing, and after the latest Zogby poll, it's looking more remote. That poll has McCain besting Obama 46-41. What's going on here? Well, first off, the McCain attack machine is paying dividends by mocking Obama's popularity and labeling him an elitist. McCain's hatchet men were essentially calling Obama uppity. That and the accusation that Obama was playing the race card sent all the necessary signals to the subconscious racists out there to stay white. And like John Kerry, Obama hasn't fought back fast enough or hard enough. He doesn't seem to relish the parry and the thrust. And if he can't throw a knife, he needs to find someone who can throw one and twist one. That's what running mates are for. Or MoveOn.org, for that matter, which wasted a commercial criticizing McCain for supporting offshore drilling just after Obama came out for it, too. Vacillation is hurting Obama. And whoever had the brilliant idea of sending him off on vacation to Hawaii ought to find a new line of work. While Russia attacked Georgia, Obama was on a surfboard, no less. Didn't John Kerry teach the Dems anything? It's not too late for Obama yet, but it's sure getting there. This isn't how he wanted to kick off his convention. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. Bob Kincaid and I are having a little private message dispute that I thought I'd bring out into the open. I don't think Bob will mind. We're arguing over whether or not it was a good thing for Obama to accept the Rick Warren invitation at all. He thinks it was a bad thing. I think that for me it was a bad thing. Morally it was a bad thing, but politically it probably was a good thing. That's where I disagree with Bob. It's one of those things where it's kind of hard to know. But in my view, if he'd not gone to meet with Rick Warren, there would be commercials from now clear till November saying, Obama met with the gays, but he wouldn't meet with Christians. Which, of course, would be false. Obama meets with Christians all the time. The refusal would have been to meet with mega pastor Rick Warren. But it sounds to me like he had to meet with one mega pastor, and Rick Warren is probably the least of the evils. Again, I don't like it. I wish he'd refused. As a citizen, I wish he refused, but sometimes I take my citizen hat off, put my political hat on, and I say, well, okay, I get it. I see why he did it. I don't really blame him. It's interesting to me, McCain hasn't done the same thing, though. Just as the evangelicals were very warm and greeting McCain and tepid in greeting Obama. Surely the NAACP, which Obama spoke in front of, would have been tepid in greeting John McCain. He just avoided the whole thing. I guess he doesn't even want to be seen as trying to court the black vote. But connected with Rick Warren, connected with the discussion of the evangelicals, of course, is always the question of abortion. And I talked with some of you in the chat room yesterday about the vice presidential choice that I think Obama's going to pick. You know, I could be wrong. I fully admit, sometimes I have inside information. Sometimes I have sources that tell me things. On this one, boy, they're keeping it close to the vest. members of Congress, nobody knows. I'm sure there's a few very close to the Obama campaign. So let me be clear. I am giving you rank speculation. No inside scoop here. But I do think, based on my rank speculation, that the most likely choice for Barack Obama, for vice president, is my own governor, Tim Kaine, a pretty good governor of Virginia. Virginia is a crucial state. Now, I know it has been Republican for, 40-something years now in presidential elections, ever since the landslide victory of Lyndon Johnson, when there was a very different Democratic Party predating the Civil Rights Act of the 1960s. But I think Virginia is very likely, and so does Obama, and so are the national polls. You see, a number of us, people like me, in fact, have moved to Northern Virginia. I report from Washington, but I live across the river in Northern Virginia, and we have the values of a liberal American city, which Washington, D.C. is, and we are changing slowly but surely Virginia. I mean, Virginia used to have a Republican governor, two Republican senators, Republican House, Republican Senate, a great majority Republican congressmen. That, I am happy to say, is changing. We now have a Democratic governor, our second. We've had a Democratic governor for 7 years. We have one Democratic senator, and we're getting a second one almost certainly in 2008. We've won over one of the legislative houses. I think we can win the second. Gerrymander the state. Take over members of Congress. Virginia is a classic red state that is now purple and turning blue. And if you look at the electoral vote maps, Obama has to win either Virginia, Colorado, or Ohio in order to win the presidency. I'm convinced that one of those states is necessary. I think he only needs one of them, but one of them is necessary. Colorado, Virginia, and Ohio have all gone for Republicans the last two elections, Colorado went for Clinton, and Ohio went for Clinton both elections. He's got to win one of them. Now, he's doing his best to appease Coloradans by going to Denver. That's where the Democratic National Convention is, of course. That's where I'm going to be next week. For Virginians, well, there's nothing better than choosing our governor for vice president to get us on board. As far as Ohioans, I got to tell you, my first choice for vice president was the very popular Democratic governor, Ted Strickland, who was a Hillary Clinton supporter. It would be seen not only as reaching out to Ohioans, but also as reaching out to Hillary Clinton supporters. He was far and away my top choice until he unfortunately said, I'm not interested. Well, really, my top choice, of course, is Al Gore, a man who I think appeals to all segments of the Democratic Party, from our far liberal wing to our more moderate wing, because he is a terrific thinker. There's nothing that would please me more than having Al Gore being vice president. Actually, I supported a Gore-Obama ticket, Obama for vice president, last year, but Al Gore didn't listen to my advice. He didn't run for president. But if he would take the vice presidency again, can't think of a better person on this planet, a more free-thinking, forward-looking person. I would cheer and, I don't know, get drunk, celebrate all night if it were Al Gore. Don't think it will be. Not because I don't think he'd be great, but because I don't think Gore wants it. So we're probably going to have Tim Kaine. Let me talk about Tim Kaine. It may not happen. We could have someone like Evan Bayh of Indiana, who I don't think, frankly, is as good a choice as Tim Kaine. But Governor Tim Kaine was not only an early supporter of Obama, but he appeals to a demographic that, let's face it, we need more of in the Democratic Party, one that some of us may grit our teeth. But he is Catholic. He is personally pro-life. But if you read between the lines, and I got to tell you, I know more about Tim Kaine, I think, than most people on the national scene, simply because I followed him in Virginia for many years. He was our lieutenant governor 4 years ago, but before becoming our governor. He is not a strict pro-life activist by any stretch. In fact, Tim Kaine is on the record as saying he does not believe in overturning Roe v. Wade, and he does not believe in appointing justices that would overturn Roe v. Wade. Of course, he's, you know, wouldn't have that opportunity unless he became president. So I don't want you to be, I don't want you to be all scared of Tim Kaine. Now, he is personally pro-life. That's his choice. Remember, to be pro-choice doesn't mean you believe that everyone, you know, should have an abortion. To be pro-choice means that you respect those who are pro-life, just as you respect those that believe that women should have abortions. He's personally pro-life. On his abortion policies, you know, there are a few things I would change. He supports parental consent laws with a judicial overpass. I don't support those laws, but let's be clear what those laws are. There's, he's saying that before a girl under 18 has an abortion, she either has to have parental consent or the consent of a judge. Now, I'm really glad he includes that consent of a judge. That's really vital. I don't think those laws make any sense. I think if a 13-year-old girl is having a child, she would most likely tell her parents. And if she doesn't tell her parents, that's a very problematic family to begin with, and exactly the kind of family you don't want to bring a new child into. But that's, in the scheme of things, I think, a relatively minor difference. The main thing is I want to say to all of you, don't think of Tim Kaine as this awful conservative Democrat. He's no Joe Lieberman, I assure you. He is someone who's firmly on the right of labor. His father was a welder. He was a labor lawyer out there supporting people who've been discriminated against. You know, no more person on the side of the oppressed than an employment lawyer. This is a guy who I think has solid values and solid, moderate, liberal values. He's not a leftist. He's not at all a Maxine Waters. But he's no Joe Lieberman either. So please don't be concerned about Tim Kaine. Your only concern should be that he doesn't have that much personality, but that's okay. Obama's got enough personality for both of them, and I do think he's a team player. In fact, I'd venture to say that he's the best choice Obama could have right now, apart from Al Gore or Ted Strickland, who have taken themselves out of the mix. I certainly would prefer Tim Kaine over Evan Bayh or Catherine Sebelius, who doesn't impress me at all, frankly. I've seen her speak. She seems, I mean, Tim Kaine has more personality than Catherine Sebelius, and she's not going to bring Kansas in, whereas Kaine could bring Virginia. That could bring the 2 points that makes a difference in Virginia, that makes a difference in the election. So, you know, is Kaine perfect? No. Of course not. But as vice president, I think he'll be just fine. Listen, you know, when Kennedy took Johnson, there's much more of a reason to think Lyndon Johnson was a monster than Tim Kaine. He was crucial in many ways to the election of Kennedy. And for all the horrific things Johnson did in Vietnam, on civil rights, on the war on poverty, on domestic issues, he actually was a pretty good president. I realize that saying, except for Vietnam, you know, he was a good president is a bit like saying to Mrs. Lincoln, well, except for the shooting, how'd you like to play? But notwithstanding that, I do think, except for Vietnam, Lyndon Johnson was a very good president. Bob asked in the chat room, why not people like Russ Feingold and Jack Reed? I love Russ Feingold and Jack Reed. I've met them both personally. Actually, I spent more time with Reed of Rhode Island than anyone else. But let's face it, this is all about geopolitics. Jack Reed represents Rhode Island, the single most Democratic state in the United States, more Democratic than Massachusetts, more Democratic than Hawaii. This is a state that not only will deliver its 4 electoral votes to Obama, but every state around it will. Massachusetts, Connecticut, even the states that touch them, Vermont, New York, probably even New Hampshire. He doesn't need a Northeastern liberal. Russ Feingold, I think, is a terrific senator. In fact, I really respect Feingold for being the only senator to vote against the Patriot Act. This is an independent-minded person. This is someone who didn't take PAC money. I would be pleased as punch if he chose Russ Feingold. And let's face it, Wisconsin, unlike Rhode Island, is a state that votes for Democrats, but by very squeaking margins. Russ Feingold would be a fine choice, but I think that Kaine would be seen as a reach to the middle. Yes, I know you may hate that, but a reach to the middle, a reach to Catholics who believe it or not, are far more strong supporters of the Democratic Party than Protestants. One of the people who taught me that, by the way, was my former boss, Congressman Barney Frank. He said, people talk about conservative Democrats, conservative Catholics, and they point to the ones in Supreme Court. Let's face it, 5 of the 9 justices on Supreme Court, a majority of the justices are Catholic, and they are the most right-wing members of the court, right? Scalia's Catholic, Thomas is Catholic, Alito's Catholic, Kennedy's Catholic, and who am I forgetting? The Chief Justice, Roberts, is also Catholic. So people often think of Catholics as conservative, but that is not true. There are conservative Catholics, people like Bob Novak, some horrible right-wing people, but actually, on average, Catholics in America are more liberal than Protestants. Irish Catholics, Italian Catholics tend to have very strong liberal traditions. They disagree with the Democratic Party on issues like abortion, but they very strongly agree with the Democratic Party on issues like helping the poor, on looking out for the environment, on taking care of the least of us. So this is a very important demographic of the Democratic Party. Many of the so-called Reagan Democrats were Catholic, and I think that that's another reason why Tim Kaine would be a fine choice. There are others. If you have an idea of someone you'd like to see as vice president, let me hear from you. 877-4HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. Meanwhile, the press doesn't seem to have much to focus on. They're all waiting with bated breath for the vice presidential choices, which will occur any moment. They may occur by tomorrow. I'll be able to talk about it then. It's got to occur soon. The Olympics close on Sunday, so he can't do it after the closing of the Olympics. And I suspect he's going to come out probably tomorrow, because Friday's not a big press day. So we'll see. We'll see. It'll be fun to talk about it if it's happening tomorrow. But in terms of other news, it's fascinating to me how little news is talking about Cindy McCain. Now, there's been a lot of talk about Michelle Obama, and it's fascinating to me because there's really no skeletons in Barack Obama's closet. I mean, his life has been an open book. He wrote a book about his life. And yet you see these ideas that Michelle Obama is, and I'm sorry to say this, but the, quote, angry black woman, unquote, which is, let's face it, a racist, sexist comment. It's the kind of thing that New Yorker made fun of in their cartoon. Some people seem genuinely afraid of Michelle Obama, a strong woman, an educated woman, a lawyer, in fact, who hired Barack Obama for his first legal job. And yet so little talk about Cindy McCain. It's fascinating to me. Cindy McCain is seen as the prim and proper wife. I think it's entirely racist. She's got the blonde hair pulled behind her head. She's an heiress. No one talks anything about Cindy McCain, but I think we need to explore her past. First thing about Cindy McCain, she's an adulteress, along with John McCain. Now, as far as I'm concerned, it's no one's business. But do you remember the media making a huge, huge thing over John Edwards and his infidelity to his wife 2 weeks ago? Now, I was upset about it. I admit that. I think Elizabeth Edwards seems to be the sweetest woman in the world. She's obviously dying of cancer, and she seems to be someone that, it seems very sad that he would do that to her. But fair is fair. Why no talk about the fact that John McCain, with his current wife, was cheating on his former wife? And there's more. There's more. Cindy McCain apparently has 2 half-sisters, but lied on radio and said that she was an only child. Why did she say that? Well, apparently her father had marriages before the marriage to Cindy's mother. And when her father died, he left $10,000 to one daughter, $10,000 to another daughter, and hundreds of millions of dollars to Cindy McCain, which she refuses to share with her half-sisters. Imagine if a Democrat had done that. Imagine what people would say about family values. And yet this isn't being talked about at all. Her sisters got nothing, and she hasn't helped them one iota. This beer heiress, this woman who has hundreds of millions of dollars that she didn't earn, using them to finance John McCain's campaign, won't help out her own half-sisters, even lies and claims she's an only child. Shouldn't that be in the press, at least as much as ex-presidential candidate John Edwards' affair was? Dave from California. Dave, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
He's also one of the Keating Five, and he's also a criminal with the country blind. And you're talking of these elections, like you said, it never occurred to you that they get rigged, that polls get rigged.
Well, I'll tell you this, Dave. I am doing an entire story on that tomorrow. I know you, of all people, cannot miss tomorrow's show with Bob Petrakis. We're going to go through all the details of what's been fixed or not fixed in Ohio, in Florida, in every other state. So I want to be clear. I'm not ignoring that issue. I'm devoting all of tomorrow's show to it. If a vice president is chosen, I'll have to devote some time to that. But that is my entire show tomorrow, so I am not giving up on that issue, Dave. I promise you.
Who's the author? Mark Christian Miller, is it? He just wrote the book, Loser Take All. It's now they have inside information right now. They have totally credible, unimpeachable witnesses that the elections have been rigged ever since 2000.
Well, I'll tell you this, Dave. This is very much a question for tomorrow, and I know that Bob Petrakis shares your view. I know him well. He has devoted his most of his life to this. He was big in the 2004 challenge to the presidential electors, just as I wrote the 2000 challenge to the Florida presidential electors. He wrote a challenge to the Ohio electors, and I know he agrees with you. Definitely thinks the elections aren't free and fair. I'm going to listen with an open mind to him tomorrow. I'll tell you this, Dave, where I see some progress. Okay, I don't see it in Florida. Florida, of course, is a Republican-controlled state. The irony of it, of course, is that the state is half Democratic. But there you have all the engines of state government in Republican hands. Florida is as corrupt as it was when Katherine Harris was in control in 2000. That's the bad news. But let me give you the good news. The good news is in Ohio. Ohio has gone 180 degrees from the Ohio of 2004, where you had the Secretary of State at that time put lots of voting machines in Republican areas and making Democrats stand hours and hours and hours out in the rain until they gave up and went home. Ohio's different now. Its governor, Ted Strickland, the one that I wanted to see as vice president, is a solid Democrat, is a good man. He has the engines of government, and he's doing everything he can to make sure that Ohio is a fair election. Also, the other governor I mentioned, Tim Kaine, Virginia is a very important swing state. And Tim Kaine is making sure it's a fair election. In Colorado, the third important swing state, even there again, it used to be Republican state government. It's now a Democratic state government. So in all the swing states, I think we've got a good chance of a fair election. Not in Florida. I agree. I think Florida is a mess and isn't good. But in many of the states, we have a much better shot, I think, than we had in 2004. Go ahead.
Well, what I can speak to firsthand, Mark, and I hope you hear it, is that these Patriot Act troopers, if you've got information in a computer, polls, election results, they invade that computer and they flip it around to be what they want it to be.
No, I understand that. I know all about how to flip the Diebold election machines. But what I'm saying is that at least in three crucial swing states, and I really think this election will be decided in Colorado, Virginia, or Ohio. Mark my words, Obama just needs to win one of those states. And he's president of the United States. If he loses all three, McCain is president of the United States. I'm convinced of that. And in all three of those important states, you have Democratic officials who are controlling the election machinery. And I have to think, and I'm going to talk with Bob about it tomorrow. Bob's on your side, Dave. He is
okay,
a complete
I'll be with
skeptic.
You. I'll be with you.
Yeah, no, he's a complete skeptic, and he's going to say everything that I think you believe in. So I'm going to hear him through. We're going to have a good discussion tomorrow. But in my view, these three crucial swing states are in proper hands, and I can't imagine them allowing some of those corrupt election machines. What I'm saying is, yes, there are still corrupt states. Yes, I don't trust Florida. Yes, there are other states in the United States where I'm sure we have no hope in Texas, even if
take a peek at
Obama had
the revolution. And
absolutely. I read their stuff. The bill that I've supported for a long time, Rush Holtz, election bill that to provide for a paper record. It has not passed. But many states at the state level are moving in that direction. My understanding, and I'll ask Petrakis, my understanding is 35 of the 50 states now have required paper records or some kind of election ballot. Now, that's not perfection. That's not 50. 15 corrupt states is still way too many. But it's far, 35 is far more than we had in 04 and a lot more than we had in 2000. The point is I part of it, Dave, some of it, I admit, it goes down to just personality. I tend to be an optimist. In the worst days of George W. Bush, I still thought America was going to pull through. I didn't think that we would be destroyed. And some people, I think, Dave, honestly, you're always sort of a bit of a pessimist. You're always looking at the glass half empty. We may be looking at the exact same glass, but I've always been a bit of an optimist, and I have to hope that he'll pull through.
Look at Bush and tell me you're an optimist. Look at McCain and tell me you're an optimist. Look at
Obama. Dave, I'm an optimist because Bush is ending. I'm an optimist because 5 months from now, Bush will no longer be president. I have nothing optimistic to say about George Bush or Dick Cheney or Karl Rove.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? You may not want to hear this. I probably shouldn't say this on the horn. But as awful as I think John McCain is, and I do think he'd be an awful president, I actually don't think he could ever be as bad as the current holder of the office. I just don't think it's possible.
Even then,
I look up a little.
He's going to work at being as bad as he can, it sounds like to me.
Well, maybe
anyway,
so.
Yeah, well, I didn't mean to rush you a day here. Certainly.
No. Thanks for your call. As I said, it's already right there on my website. If you want to post some links that I'll take a look at and report to Bob Petrakis tomorrow, I'm happy to do so. But that is the topic for tomorrow. Unless a vice president is chosen, that is the sole topic for tomorrow, and we're going to go through it at some length. Thanks for your call, Dave. I just want to remind people that Bob Kincaid has his family in town. Apparently, family he hasn't seen in about a decade, so I don't think any of us can blame him. He is a man with true family values. He's going to be spending some time with his family tonight. He will be live tomorrow, though, so if you're a Bob Kincaid fan like I am, you won't want to miss him live tomorrow. And I don't know which rerun he's playing tonight, but if you haven't heard it, of course, our Hillbilly Elitist is always interesting and fun to listen to. I need to also remind you that I will be in Denver. Yes, I am doing a crazy thing. I'm thinking that somehow, along with 15,000 journalists and 100,000 delegates and hangers-on and so forth and Democrats, I'm going to come up with some unique story. I have no idea. But I promise you this. I will work hard to find out whatever I can, and I'm going to be reporting to you.